The following message was recorded at the No Regrets Men's Conference. More information about the conference is available at noregretsconference.org. Feel free to make copies of this message for others, but please do not charge for those copies or alter the content in any way without permission.
Welcome. I'm Chris Van Bronckhorst. I'm the director of No Regrets here. So that means my responsibilities have to do everything to do really with anything that goes through the lens on the streaming out to the host sites, and then the No Regrets study series. And we are honestly and truly most interested not in today, but the other 364 days. That's what we're really, really interested in. In other words, coming away from a great event like this, and No Regrets is known for this conference. I want to make them known for being a discipleship process, too. In other words, we really want to see every man engaged. I loved Crawford this morning brought to our attention, you need to make a decision. And the decision really is to jump in and become involved in a lifetime lifestyle of discipleship. And so that's what we're about. We want to help men to be able to get to that point. And so this track actually is the track for men's leaders so that we can begin the discussion and talk about that. And I want to bring up the fact that before you leave, if you haven't already gotten one of these from one of our other sessions, we're going to have what we're calling a recalibrate conference, which is really a facilitated discussion that goes even deeper into some of these areas of men's discipleship. So if you're a men's leader and you have a team at home, you may want to invite them to come and participate in this discussion as well. This will be held right here at Elmbrook. And our intent is not for it just to be an event. That one itself is going to continue on. Perhaps we might have webinars. Perhaps we might have hookups and hangouts and some things like that. And the idea is to connect us as leaders out there in the local church. It's almost kind of like the no man left behind. Well, we want no men's leader left behind either. So be aware of that. Well, the guys who are here, the last session, had an opportunity to hear from the national field director, Jeff Kasaya. He talked about the concepts, anyway, involved in reaching men on the fringe. And that's an important concept, but it's also hooked together with this topic as well. And this one's called Five Kinds of Men. And so we have another distinguished guest here from Man in the Mirror, Ron Reed, a great friend of ours. His role is the Chicagoland area for men's discipleship. And so he comes from a close region here, and what's really exciting is that Ron's been gone all morning. He wasn't sleeping. There are actually three host sites down in the Chicago area that he has launched down there. And he just got through telling me he's got two more up his sleeve for next year. He's the kind of guy we want, because we want to see as many men impacted as possible. And why? So they can have a great day away from their wives? No. So that these guys will enter into a lifestyle of discipleship. That's what this is all about. So Ron's going to get up in a minute and to share with us the concepts here. I hope you really enjoy these, but we also want to be connected with you on a regular, long-term basis as a team here, both Man in the Mirror and No Regrets, together reaching out to churches, helping church leaders in any way we can in the long run. So hopefully you're on board for that. So why don't you stand just for a second, and I'll lead us in a word of prayer, and we'll get this thing launched. Father, thanks so much for a group of men here who have committed themselves, at least this afternoon for a period of time, to listen in and to participate in this whole idea of having lifestyle discipleship among men. We're passionate about this. But then we don't want to run ahead with things that are not of you. So we want to call upon you right now. We need your perspective. We need your wisdom. And this afternoon, we need your attention to make an impact, a long-term impact, from this conference on into the local churches all over this nation, all over the North America continent where we have host sites. So, Father, we pray that this would continue, and those who are listening in after the conference via the recordings and so on, we also join in with you in this great endeavor. So guide us and direct us, guide Ron, and speak through him now. In Christ Jesus' name, amen.
Amen.
All right, gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris.
Thank you. I noticed that Chris answered his own question on we're not just here to get away from wives very quickly before anybody else jumped in and said, yeah. So, yeah, I have... we know that tomorrow's Super Bowl Sunday. I have three sons and two daughters. We have five kids because we didn't want six. But my middle son is up visiting from, he lives in Nashville. He's in a Christian band down there and travels, tours across the nation. But he called me up on his way up and he said, "So where are we going to watch the game?" And I literally went, "What game?" Because if the Seahawks aren't in it, you know, who cares, right? or the Packers. That's right. There was a bit last year of a game that probably made most of you a little upset while the rest of us were jumping up and down. Chris mentioned involvement with No Regrets. My involvement with No Regrets does go back several years of coming up here with my brother-in-law, who lives here and attends Elmbrook. And then when I was pastoring, and I've been a pastor for the last 35 years. 4 years ago this weekend, Tony Evans was the keynote speaker. You guys remember that? And I stood there. It was literally my last Saturday as the pastor of this church because I left on Monday to start this position with Man in the Mirror. So I stood there and watched. We had 450 men at our church, at our simulcast. And Tony Evans gave that keynote address on kingdom men. Remember that? Did you apply that? Have you studied that since? We watched 450 men walk out of our auditorium empty-handed. Having just been challenged to be a kingdom man, we didn't give them the next step. And so now my role with No Regrets is I want to help the churches that are coming to our simulcasts in Chicago, and I'm not a Bears fan, by the way, the churches that come to the No Regrets simulcast, they're prepared before the simulcast. So we literally start in October of letting the churches know, if you're bringing men, you need to come to this seminar that we do in January that is the next steps, No Regrets. And we challenge churches, how do you get your men to not just attend, but now take those next steps? Because that's critical that, we use the phrase to capture momentum. You guys are going to walk out of here. Your men are going to walk out of here with a lot of momentum today, but it'll crash if we don't do something purposeful, intentional about it. So I'm going to ask for a volunteer. You. You need to uncross your legs. You can sit down. I'm going to ask you. What's your name?
Joel.
Joel, we're having a men's retreat in about 3 weeks, and we would really like to have you. We'd really, really like to have you come. Would you be willing to come and be a part of that retreat?
Depends if you get up.
You're fortunate I've lost a few pounds lately, but yes, sir.
Would this be what you're saying is the men, they're not, they come, they have a good time and all that, then it just falls off. And that's something like Promise Keepers, you know, yes. You get thousands of men going through these events, but when their lives change.
Yeah. I use Promise Keepers when I'm working with a church. How many of you guys went to Promise Keepers? And what happened on Monday morning after you got back home? And the normal answer I get back? Nothing. You know, I went back to work. We got busy. Because we did not do the next steps. It wasn't for lack of effort. It was for lack of intentionality. There was not a plan. Now, I sat on Joel's lap to show you. That's what we kind of do with men in our church when we invite them to come something. I don't know Joel. And I get way too intimate with him to invite him to a retreat. And you know, he's like, I don't know you. So he said, depends on if you get off my lap. But literally, if you ask a guy, hey, will you come to our retreat? His thought process is, you know, the number one fear of every man is, I don't want to look stupid. And his thought process is, I don't know you. I don't know what you're going to do at this retreat. And, you know, we obviously don't sit on a lap to make an invitation, but it's almost that kind of an invitation without knowing who are our men. So Coach K did the last session, and he talked about the intentionality, but also know your players. And I think I apologize. I don't think everybody got the sheet that has the No Man Left Behind model on there. Down at the bottom of it, it does give the thing that happens in most churches. And guys, I pastored for 35 years, and I got to tell you, I was intentional, I thought, about ministering to our men. I really wanted to reach every man. And so I was intentional. I would reach out to that man. But we really lacked in regards to an intentional process. Oh, good. Thanks, Mike. of getting more men involved. So this workshop is titled The Five Types of Men. And the reason is because you have in your church today these five kinds of men. As a matter of fact, we have in our nation today these five kinds of men. There are right now 73, this is based on the last census, 73 million men who do not profess a faith in Christ. 73 million. That's the age of 15 above that need Christ. And that's, if you have the second sheet that we passed out, that's the first kind, is that this kind of man needs Christ. Or we might call him the natural man. The Bible does. And it says, actually, and Paul wrote to the Corinthians regarding this natural man, that they do not receive the things of the Spirit because they are their foolishness to him. Literally, the word is used for foolishness is they're moronic to him. The things of Christ, prayer, dependence on Christ, living in Christ, sacrificing, dying for Christ, loving Christ, those things are all foolishness to the man who does not know Christ. And so if we're going to try to reach that man, we're not going to sit on his lap and say, hey, we want you to come to a retreat. We're not going to be able, if we don't know, and by the way, I've got the five kinds of chairs up here. If we don't know this guy and what makes him tick and what's going on in his life, if we don't understand him, there's no way he's going to understand us. And so I appreciate how Coach puts it, that we will a lot of times look at this guy and say, oh, he just doesn't get it. He doesn't. He can't. They're foolishness to him. But we better get him. We better understand what's going on in his life, in his heart. Now, again, this guy, how many of you saw the movie with Nicolas Cage a few years ago? Cage or Gage? That it was called Family Man, where he was this rich guy, and all of a sudden, he has a family. And the first few scenes of him with this family are hilarious as he has no clue what he's doing. And he's just stunned, and he stumbles through it. But, you know, his eyes constantly, unfortunately, he has this little 5-year-old daughter that is constantly saying to him, you don't know what you're doing, do you? Let me show you. And she does this. Well, that's this guy. That's the natural man. Or to put it a little less Hollywood, I was sitting in a restaurant about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, with my wife, and we were having our breakfast, and sitting on a table just across from us was a guy that was a dad. He had a little toddler, and he sat there the whole time playing a video game. He was literally sitting in his chair playing a video game, because I could see his screen, and he did that while his wife or girlfriend, I'm not sure which, chased after this toddler the entire time. And he had no clue. He literally, I even said to my wife, that's the kind of guy we're trying to reach as the fringe guy. Because he literally had no knowledge of what it took to be a dad, certainly not what it took to be a husband, and absolutely not what it takes to be a Christian man, a leader. Clueless. 73 million men in America could be titled clueless. They really don't know the things of the Spirit. So, if it's 73 million men in America, this is something that you guys have got to realize as you're... How many of you guys are pastors in the room? Okay? How many are a men's discipleship leader? You're leading a team that's trying to lead a men's ministry. Okay? And so if I were to ask you... hold your hands up again, ministry discipleship leaders. Okay. I can't see your name. Tim, how many men are in your men's ministry?
The team or...
In your men's ministry, yeah.
The whole thing?
Yeah.
About 100, 120.
And how many men are in your church?
250 probably.
So I'm going to ask you again, how many men are in your men's ministry?
Not enough.
The answer would be 250. but actually, it's going to go even beyond that, because those 250 are sitting in these four chairs. You've got another probably about 150 guys that are sitting in this chair. So do all of you guys. You have a good number of guys that are sitting in that chair. I would always spend, as a pastor, I spent every year going through our roster, our directory, and looking at, you know, who are the men that are active and what are we doing. I rarely looked at this guy. This guy, if you stopped him in the street and said, you'd say to him, do you attend church? And he would say, what's the name of your church?
Northbridge.
Okay. He'd say, yeah, I go to church. Where? Northbridge. And you might go, really? I don't think I've ever seen you there. His wife comes. His daughter comes and is involved in Awana or whatever you have. Maybe his grandpa was buried there. But that's his church. Why? Because that's the only church he has any knowledge of. So he is your man. He's in your church. He's not going to go to another church unless somebody grabs him. But he's part of your church. He's part of your men's ministry. No, he's part of your ministry to your men. You see, if you're just building a men's ministry, then you're gonna be hitting these two chairs. And these two chairs, which are about 80% of the men of your church. In working with churches, I'll ask them, again, same thing, how many men in your men's ministry? It's a trick question, I know. But I'll ask, how many men in your men's ministry? And they will usually say, a church of 100, they'll say about 20. A church of 200, about 40. It's almost always about 20% of our men. Almost always, without fail, about 20%. That means 80% of your men are not in your men's ministry. I appreciate your answer. Not enough. That we're missing 80% of the guys. Why? Because we're doing things for these 20%. This is where we focus our efforts, our actions, because they come. It's nice to have a few guys show up at our events, so we focus on the guys that we know are going to come. In the meantime, these guys are being left out. So this fringe guy doesn't know, and he's not going to listen to, and he's not going to be a part of the activities that you're doing. But here's something that he will come to. As a matter of fact, with all of you guys, beyond Christmas and Easter, what is the number one thing that you would have men attending at your church? Matter of fact, you probably even include Christmas and Easter. Number one thing that you would have that is not a men's ministry thing, but you have a lot of men sitting in these two chairs attend.
Father's Day?
Mother's Day?
We have cookouts.
Cookouts? Yeah. So you get a lot of men that show up. That's kind of a men's activity. But yep. Anything else where it wasn't even your doing, wasn't a men's event, wasn't a men's breakfast, but all of a sudden a lot of men show up. Anything else? Yeah.
Sometimes work projects, either helping somebody or helping someone in the church.
Which really kind of communicates men will come and do. They'll do. Just don't ask me to be. Yeah. Go ahead.
Church cleanup day.
Cleanup day? Okay. Somebody had one over here? Funerals. There will be more lost men walk into your church in a funeral than probably any other service you have. We used to have, when I was pastoring, we had an Awana ministry. And our Awana closing program was not just hand out the awards. We had leaders that put on this Disney production every year. That one year it was Shrek. And the wicked king had stolen the list of awards. And so all the Shrek characters, they're all dressed in full costume. They would spend 3 weeks building the set for this thing. I mean, it was phenomenal. As a result that it was phenomenal, it wasn't just a boring hand out the awards. We would have, this is not an exaggeration, 400 men who never attended another thing at our church. They would show up for that because their son was getting an award, their daughter, their grandson, their niece, their nephew was getting an award, and they would come to that program, and we had all these lost, unchurched, chair number one men. We didn't do a thing with them. If I were pastoring that church now and we had the closing program, I would ask the Awana leaders, could we help you with your 3-week setup? Could our men's ministry come and help you be a part of this? And we'll build the sets. We'll do whatever. But we would like to have, they always had a cookie and Kool-Aid time. It's mandatory for closing programs, cookies and Kool-Aid. Could we set up a strongman booth? Those sledgehammer, where you hit the sledgehammer, it rings the bell. If you ever have one of those, make sure the bell rings every single time. Again, I don't want to look stupid as a man. So could we set that up? Because every kid walking in is going to say, Daddy, come over, hit the sledgehammer. And so that as they're standing in line, not attending a church, not going to attend the church, don't want to look stupid, but as they're standing in line, hey, George, I don't think we've met.
Yeah, who's your son, daughter? You know, this guy.
Oh, yeah, I know. I know the game leader. And so and you build that rapport with them. And then you say, hey, you know, George, we're having, somebody said breakfast a while ago. We're having a breakfast, but, you know, not just breakfast. We understand, men will come and eat bacon. But we're having this guy that's going to talk about, you know, you've got your son, Jim. You want to be the best dad you can be, don't you? How about if you come to this thing? We've got this speaker who's going to talk about how to be a better dad. I'd love to have you as part of it. And you give him the invitation card. On the back of that, what we have, is a little assessment. How am I doing in this area as being a dad? So they see that assessment, they see the invitation, and hopefully, yeah, I need to be a part of that. So think about what else is happening in your church that a lot of these guys are coming to, but it wasn't because you invited them. It was because something else is going on. And how can you reach that guy in that? How can you be an ally to that ministry so they'll be an ally to your ministry as well? So that's this guy. So he wakes up in the morning. This guy wakes up in the morning thinking about, what am I going to do today? What's my life going to happen? This is all about me for him. If you remember the, how many of you guys ever saw the Campus Crusade chairs, the keys to a healthy life? They had the throne of Christ, and then they have the man, me, outside of this. The man is outside. Christ is not even in his life. And so, you know, it's definitely Christ outside of his life. And as a result, everything in his life is pretty much in disarray. So the way you're going to reach that guy is to show him, you know, to help him to see, yeah, my life's in disarray. My life is messed up. You know, you start quoting scripture to him, he's probably going to shut you down. You start inviting him to church, probably not going to listen to you. But if you point out to him, yeah, my life is in disarray, he's going to agree. Because he wakes up in the morning thinking, what am I going to do today? It's all about my life and me. So the goal of this guy, of this fringe guy, this natural man, is literally to help him to identify the lack of this in his life. There's a lot of different things that'll do that, a lot of different curriculum, a lot of, you know, but it's mainly the best way you're going to reach this guy, probably the only way you're going to reach this guy, and for that matter, this guy. I've taught for many years, I'm known in the churches that I've pastored at for this story, that there was a college sociology class that did a study. They literally spent the time to go on the street and ask people. So Norm, I'll pick on you. This is why people don't sit on the front row. This is the exact reason. So, yeah, okay. How you doing?
Good.
That's the number one answer given. When they did the study, they asked people on the street, how you doing? And the number one answer was some derivative of good, fine, well, okay, great. You know, and that would be the answer. But if I said to you, Norm, how you really doing? a little bit of thought, but the number one answer given was tired or busy. You know, because now you're getting a little bit more, yeah, I'm doing good, but I'm really tired. But when they did this, when they turned it around and asked the third time, Norm, how you really doing?
Yeah, I'm busy, tired.
Okay, you jumped to question two. The number one answer given on question three was, how much time do you have? Because now you've gone beyond being polite to showing, I really want to know. So the best way you're going to reach that guy, Coach calls it the ministry of hanging out. You're going to take him to coffee. You're going to go to a sports game. You're going to play a round of golf with him. You're going to build a relationship with him. Because if you invite him to you, you know, chances are he's going to say, yeah, I'll come, thank you. And you're not going to see him. Yeah, right? You agree to that? He'll pass you off. Because, you know, he's going to be polite. But if you get in his life, now, again, I don't know Norm. Norm doesn't know me. Same thing with Joel. But if I said to these guys, what do you like to do for spare time?
Oh.
Me too. What are the chances of that? Yeah, so golfing. If I said, hey, Norm, we need a fourth. Would you be willing to join the fourth? And now I'm purposely going to put Norm in my cart, or you know, I walk, of course. I'm going to walk beside him. And so, you know, we're going to hang out. I'm going to find out. How many kids you got?
Three.
What are their ages?
35, 33.
So you got some grandkids?
29.
Are they married?
Four
grandkids? I got 16.
And I'm only 39 years old. That's what's amazing. But, we just had our 16th grandson. We're going to build a rapport. And I'm going to start, you know, isn't grandparenting great? But what I'm going to do, I'm going to say to him, I never knew, you know, I had the responsibility of raising kids. But I like what Crawford Loritz said today about I'm investing in something I'm never going to see. But I'm spending so much time with these grandkids now. They mean more. They are the world to me. And he's going to say the same thing. And I'm going to say, man, don't you find out you just don't have all the tools necessary? And he's going to agree because he's going to say the same thing. And we're going to be able to start talking about how do we get these tools or these dots in order. And at some point I'm going to be able to say, well, here's another thing I found out on the golf course. If you're stuck with three guys you never met, you know, you go out as a single or you can go out as a double and they link you up. About the third hole when, you know, you've rushed the first drives and you've scattered and you've come back to the second tee and scattered. About the third tee box is when you finally say, what do you do? Because that's what we men do, right? We always ask, what do you do? Because we're asking at that point, who are you? What are you? And I used to say I'm a pastor, and that ended the conversation. Because by then, they've already revealed the cuss words and everything like that. But I now say to people, and you can use this, because if you're a men's discipleship leader or a pastor, I help men discover and take the next step of their spiritual journey. And then I'll go, whoa, what if I'm not on one? Oh, you're on one. That's what I'm here to help you discover that. You're on one. You just maybe don't know the direction yet. So again, you build the rapport, right? That's what you do with this guy. You got to start building him. You're enlisting him onto your team. Yes, sir.
I find it very uncomfortable. Okay, the singing on Sunday, the singing stops. They take collections, and then everybody gets up, take a break. You know, and then you're supposed to go and greet everybody and all that stuff.
Yeah.
To me, it's very uncomfortable because you get the same thing. You just have a question, the conversation here. How you doing? I'm doing fine. How you doing? Oh, I'm doing okay. Okay, then you go sit down and you got to talk.
You've made the natural segue into this guy. Into the second chair.
So you haven't learned nothing about this guy.
Right.
And what you really want to do is, well, can we have a little more intimate conversation right at that time?
So that's, and that really is where we literally, we get into this guy. This guy is not in your church. He's of your church, mm-hmm. but he's not in your church. He's not attending very rarely. This guy is there. He's probably there most Sundays. Maybe not every Sunday, but he's there, yeah, 2 out of 4 Sundays. And he sits in this chair and basically says, you don't bother me, I won't bother you. That's his mindset of sitting in church. And it's not just to you, it's to him. You don't bother you. How many times have you ever heard somebody say, me and God have an agreement? And they may not even say what it is, but what it is he doesn't bother me and I don't bother him. You know, I'm a self-made man, except that most self-made men didn't read the instructions. And so as a result, we're a mess. This guy sits in church. I mean, he's there, probably because his wife, you know, urges him. But he's really not. As a matter of fact, how do you know this guy, as opposed to this guy over here? Tomorrow morning, look around during the worship time, during the singing. And if you got a guy that's this, chances are he is your cultural Christian. He is a Christian because his culture is Christian. He is a Christian because when he was 9 years old, he made a decision for Christ. I was the cultural Christian growing up. I mean, I really was not. I was really the fringe guy, but I didn't know Jesus, but I knew an awful lot about him. And, you know, that's this guy. He knows about Jesus, but he doesn't really know what it means to be a Christian man. He doesn't really understand what it means to surrender my life to Christ. I have a video, and I'm sorry, was not able to play it, but I want you to write down on your notes. You can get it on YouTube. It's called Ryan's Story, Plastic Jesus. And it's this guy, you know, he's kind of the, probably a little older than the millennial guy, but he's 30s, 40s, and his words say, yeah, I've got faith, but then written above is it's pretty weak. I pray, you know, and then the words will say whenever I'm in trouble. And it's, you know, I accepted Jesus, and you know, I prayed the prayer, and it changed my life. And then it starts getting real. Didn't do anything. And so the reality of what he's facing is what's in his thoughts, what's not being said. That's this guy. Ryan's story, Plastic Jesus. At the very end he says, my Jesus is real. And then it says, my Jesus is plastic. So that's what a lot of these cultural guys, that's where they're at. If we were to take Cruz, where did I put the... We would say that he has now put me on the throne, but he's invited Christ in. Jesus is in his life. He is at least a head knowledge, maybe even way back when he was 9 years old, a heart acceptance of Christ. But his life is still in disarray because he's on the throne. So this guy wakes up in the morning and says, okay, God, what are you going to do for me today? His faith is very much a self-centered, self-driven faith. So the parable of the sower and the seed would come into play, where the sower threw the seed and it fell onto the different kinds of ground. This would be the guy that the cares of the world, the hardness of heart, all of those have kept this fruit or the seed from really growing up. Now again, think about the men in your church. They're attending, but that's about it. And that's where you're going to start. I'm going to pass this out in just a moment. Matter of fact, let's probably again going to need more copies of this. But this is where you start doing the audit of your men. And you don't need to worry about doing this right now because we're going to do this at the end. But you start saying, who are these guys? Not just how many, not just percentage, but who are these guys? And by the way, this would be about 38 million men in America that are the cultural guy. So of our 113 plus million men, this is you're now looking at about 80 to 90% of the men in your church, these two chairs. Here's a good picture of this as well, taking a picture of the ushers. The fringe guy avoids the usher because, to your question, he's just going to ask me how am I doing, and he doesn't really care. So he's not. If he shows up in church, he's going to find a way to circumvent and navigate around any kind of shaking hands or anything like that. This guy will actually serve as an usher. Because that way I get to walk around during the sermon. I get to I get to not really be a part of anything. So he'll actually, serving parties, he's going to show up at a serving party. I can tip my hand to God. I can do what I need to do and then feel pretty good about my faith and myself. So he is nominally active. You know what nominal means? In name only. That's what the word nominal actually means. So he is in name only, in the Christian faith, in your church. So the goal there, same thing, engage. You're trying to engage this guy. You're going to, as men's leaders, this is where you're going to recruit men and get them to start spending time with these guys beyond the how you doing. To actually finding out what they like, where they're at, and how can we start building. It's also where you're going to start, as a men's leadership team, start thinking about, instead of the retreat, I invited Joel to a retreat, but how many of you guys, you just love the retreat? You love to go to a retreat? Yeah? I don't. And the reason I don't is I snore terribly. Now, I don't need cures. Don't come up and tell me the cures. I snore. So as a result, I know everybody in that cabin hates me. By 3 o'clock in the morning, they're ready to kill me. And not only that, it's not good beds. We're doing sports activities that, again, I love sports, but I love to play sports and not necessarily a lot of the things that happen in retreats. So that's not something against me. It's also not going to be the thing that's going to reach this guy. Because, again, I don't know you. I don't know what you're going to do with that. And so I'm probably not going to come to your retreat. Now, Coach advocates this. If you took your retreat that's going to go to Lake Geneva, good retreat place, but instead you brought it to your church and you spent a day at church as opposed to an overnight thing, And you get the speakers and you have the activities and you're still doing the things, but I'm not having to spend a night with you. I'm not having to spend as much money. There's just things that can be done as you start thinking, as you start putting yourself in this chair. What's it like to sit in this chair with our activities that we're having? You have a pig roast. This guy's going to show up because he likes pork. He'll eat that. So, again, think through what's going to reach that cultural guy and what are the barriers, and start lowering those barriers is the key to this guy. Next guy up. I don't know if that answered your question in regards to getting to know him a little bit better, and not just shaking of the hands. And
in the past, we used to go to Spencer Lake Bible Camp from Illinois. We'd go up there. It's about a three-hour drive. And I always try to invite somebody. Usually these guys got problems. So for 3 hours, they'd talk all the way up there, and then way back, then I would talk to them.
Yeah.
Then you would get to know a guy
exactly.
In his heart.
And there is a reason for the retreat in that regard. So there's no doubt about it. The off-site can build. I mean, when we would go to Promise Keepers, mm-hmm. and we'd drive to Indianapolis, I was pastoring in Seattle at the time, so we went to the Kingdome ones, but when we went to Washington, D.C., I bonded with those guys like I never have. You know, when you're spending that many straight hours with a man, you get to know that guy. So, yeah. Well, hopefully we'll answer some of your question as we continue on. So the third guy, this guy, sitting in this chair, this is your biblical Christian. So the biblical guy is only about 5 million in America, and it's probably, again, about 20%, 15 to 20% of the men in your church. This guy sits in this chair and likes being in this chair because I'm learning the Word of God. I'm studying the Bible. You might still hear the I'm. I've invited Christ into my life, and I've actually put him on the throne. But I never look that way, and I prefer to not look this way. I'm very content to sit in this chair. I want to study the Bible and even hopefully apply it, because I do want to be that better dad. I do want to be that better husband. So this guy, he wakes up thinking, this guy thinks about me. This guy thinks about God and me. This guy does wake up thinking me and God. God, how can I serve you today? What can I do for you today? And he really has put Christ on the throne. So I keep setting that down. He's going to reverse this. He's going to have Jesus on the throne, and he's going to put himself at the foot of the throne and ask, Lord, help me to be that better Christian, better husband, better man. He serves. He not only attends, he serves in the church. And going back to the usher, this guy is saying, I'm an usher, so I don't have to sit in church. This guy actually says, I'm serving God. He understands. I want to serve my Lord and my God. And so his mindset is much better about the obedience factor. But the main thing is, the challenge to him is he needs to start looking this direction. By looking this direction, to the fourth chair, but he needs to start looking at other men in the church. And he's probably not at that place right now. So what your goal at that point is to equip him and affirm him. Affirm him in his faith and equip him. How can you be more of a witness, more of a man of God? We have a resource, pretty simple resource. It's called the Reach 3 card. And I say it's simple because it literally just says Reach 3 and it has three lines under it. And you to start praying for three men. So my challenge to, if I were pastoring a group of men, my challenge to these guys, and this is, again, about 20% of your men, these are the men who are attending your things, I would give them the Reach 3 and give them the roster of these men. Now, you don't identify this man and say, hey, you're one of our cultural guys, and so I want, or even this guy say, you're so far out there on the fringe, we're really praying about you, but you're asking this guy to start focusing on and praying for, thinking about. Because one of the reasons we don't reach these guys, tell me, what's the number one reason we don't reach these guys?
We don't have a relationship with them?
Yeah, we don't even think about them. We don't... This guy is so busy at work. One of our surveys through Man in the Mirror, we've surveyed men in the church, and the number one problem, all 10 men in the church, you know, as we take it down to 10, all 10 men are struggling to balance work and family. All 10. Nine of the men in the church will lose one member of their family from the faith. 9 out of 10 men in the faith, in the church, are going to lose a son or a daughter to the faith. So his main concern as he's sitting here is, I don't want to lose my kids, and I don't know how I'm going to balance my work and family. You know, as he's at work, he's thinking about his family. When he's home, he's thinking about his work. So that's this guy. He's busy. So to get him to focus is going to be our key, because usually not even giving thought to that. Then the last chair down here is men who are leaders. This is our the leaders of men, the influencers of men. They may not even be men who are on your leadership team per se, but they are leaders. And the leadership man wakes up thinking God and others. Me and God. God and me and others. God and others, rather. He's waking up thinking about his walk with God, and, Lord, how can you use me to impact and influence others? So this guy, I need to surgically attach this to my hand. This guy has this. He's constantly looking, you know, Christ is on the throne. He's at the foot of the cross, but he's looking out, and he's looking very intently at, Bill, his marriage has fallen apart. And we're having this Art of Marriage seminar at our church, and I need to invite him. I need to just, you know, sit down with him and let him know that I've been praying for him, and I want him to come to the Art of Marriage class. And he's constantly looking at, how can I influence and impact other people? Now, he's also specifically doing that in leading people. This is the guy that mentors men. I spoke 3 weeks ago at two different churches on a Saturday morning. Men's breakfasts are still the number one thing that men's ministries have. So I was asked to speak at one church, and I want to go back there because I have not felt this young in many, many years. I walked in, there wasn't a single man under the age of 85. And so there were 40 guys, and they were all, one guy was 96, 85 to 96. And I actually said to them, what am I here for, and what do you guys want to do? And one of the guys said, we're dead. Our men's ministry and our church is dead. We're not reaching the younger person. We understand that we need to become mentors to young people. How do we get them? How can we reach young men and teach them what we know? So we had our discussion. You know, I did my thing, and then I had to scoot and head across town, 45-minute drive, to another church where there was not a single man over the age of 30. And you want to know the number one thing they wanted? Mentors. And I said, wow, if I could somehow make the traffic less and get you guys closer together, because these guys want a mentor, young men, and these guys want it. Guys, I get shaking your head. You want a mentor? You would welcome a mentor in your life. Michael, you too? You'd welcome, if Norm was in your church and came up and said, hey, I'd like to have a cup of coffee. I don't know if you drink coffee, but with you. You'd welcome that, wouldn't you? There's not a young man sitting in your church that wouldn't welcome your age and experience. And it doesn't mean you're going to have a Bible study with them. You know, for years, we've defined discipleship as 80% content and 20% spending time with them. Guys, you've got to reverse that. It's got to be 80% spending time with them of doing that. And then your content is largely going to be, here's what I've learned. And you're pouring into their life. Okay, so again, men who are leaders. The last one, by the way, the goal there is encourage them and exhort them. The last chair, I kind of got stuck in the back. And there's purpose for it being back there. It's the hurting man. The hurting man could be this guy, and he just got served divorce papers. So all of a sudden, he shows up in your church. If you see this man coming to your church, guys, your question has got to be, what brought that man to church today? You can't just say, Joe's here? I can't believe Joe's here. You got to ask yourselves and ask him, what brought you here today? Because I guarantee you, if he's sitting in church on March the 7th and it's nowhere near Easter, he's hurting. Something happened. And so you've got to befriend and find out. Or he may be this guy. He might be the leadership man, and he just got the diagnosis from the doctor. It's cancer. And so taking him, you've got to take him out of that leadership role, or at least he's going to be different in it, because he's sitting in this chair now, and he's heard it. And again, your church tomorrow morning is full of hurting men. They're sitting in all four of these chairs, and you've got to ask what brought that man to church today. Again, it's an opportunity to reach that man at his point of need. He is needy at this point. Could be in any other chair, but we've got to ask him, how you really doing? Okay, so now I gave you some different sheets, and I think I have two more. The one sheet that has all the Excel thing on it that shows all the different lines. Yeah, George, hold it. This sheet, I don't have any more of them, so this sheet, this is for your leadership team to do. This is an opportunity for you to actually put the names down. You know, and if you don't want to put names, put initials down. But you've got to identify the members of your team. You got to know who's sitting in what chair. Then I'm going to, Mike, I'm going to ask you. We get this sheet out. This is actually a step of what do we need to do to reach them. So it's a leadership team exercise. How are we going to reach these different kinds of guys? What are we doing right now that's reaching them? Do an audit. What are we doing right now that would bring any one of these guys in? And what are we lacking? And so then instead of just planning your calendar about, well, when are we going to do the retreat this year? When are we doing the breakfast? And you know, instead of having just activities, they become purposeful. Why are we doing this breakfast? Who are we wanting to reach? Who would be the guy that would reach that guy? What are we doing after the breakfast that's going to get that guy involved? So you got to start doing all five. And then this last sheet is just an overview of what I gave. So I didn't want to, you know, give you all the goodies beforehand. You get to take them home now. So any questions? Yes.
In all cases, you're suggesting that relationship development is what gets a guy from A to B, right?
Yes.
A man's got to invest in another man
yeah.
to migrate him from wherever he is to that next level.
Yeah.
In a church the size of Elmbrook, there are probably 2,000 men here.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you, we attended Willow right after I resigned from my church. And Willow has 26 sections, Willow Creek, 26 sections. They now have a pastor, you know, shepherding team in each one of those sections. We're working with them to get a men's pastor in every one of the sections because everybody sits in their same place. At Elmbrook, we attended here when I lived in Milwaukee for a short while. We always sat in the old chapel in the upper portion looking. I looked right down on Stuart. I could almost read his notes. So, and we sat there every time we came. Why? That's my comfort zone now. That's where I sit. So your men sit in the same place. So get a, you know, if these two rows, these guys are going to sit here every Sunday, get a men's guy sitting in that chair, and every time he sees a new guy, or every time he sees somebody that's been missing for 3 weeks, or matter of fact, find out who these guys are, and when they miss 3 weeks, hey, you've been, Scott, we haven't seen you over the last 6 weeks. Doing okay? You know, or call him and say, Scott, haven't seen you in the last 3 weeks. Anything wrong? So it really becomes a purposeful, let's build section hosts or section pastors, men's pastors. And then those become, that's part of your leadership ally outreach. Your leadership team is the vision casters, and then your doers are doing this. They're you know, cooking the breakfast and doing all that, but they're learning, building those relationships. Again, I'm sitting here, I'm busy, and you're asking me to do, hey, all I'm asking you to do is identify the top guy sitting in these two rows. Would you be willing to do that? And if they don't, then you put shame on them. Throw guilt on them. Anything else? Any other questions?
Are those people very, if we're talking 5 million people and all, are these people very few?
Yeah, I didn't finish that out.
These guys are about 5 million, and these guys over here are about 1 million. And these guys, this guy, is about 113 million. Every man has his hurt that he's trying to work through and probably doesn't know how to do so.
I helped run a Tuesday men's Bible study in the church. And constantly trying to recruit people I know and even friends to come. But they always got, well, I got this going, I got this going, I got this going, I got this going.
Yep, everybody's busy.
Everybody's busy.
Hey, one last thing before I forget, because Mike brought these up here. One of the things we do, Man in the Mirror, is these different seminars. We've got the newest one is called Rock Solid Men. We have seven seasons. It's now called Life Plan, right? So we've got Dads That Make a Difference, Success That Matters. So we do these seminars as a one day, Saturday morning, or sometimes a Friday evening, Saturday morning. But then this is the 6 week, because we're men and we don't like to read. This is the 6 week follow-up plan. So you bring them with the intentionality. We're going to get that guy in a group. Somebody said small groups. We're going to get him in the group, and then they're going to, you know, we'll take the next step to sustain the change. I'm sorry, ran out of time.
No, you're good.
Okay.
Thank you so much, Ron. We really appreciate that.